I'm one of those war babies you've probably heard about. I was born in 1940 and brought up on a rural property in the area near Adaminaby, an old, pretty old property. The family had been there for a lot of generations. And like everybody else in the area here, I suppose, the coming of the Snowy Mountains Authority had a big impact on my life, more so than I probably realised at the time. I well remember as a kid I went to the grand opening, I think in 1949, over at Eagle Hawk there, and all the important people were up on the dais and they pressed the plunger and all that sort of thing. And there was a photograph taken, and I was in amongst one of the kids at the time, sort of, I was about 8 or 9, of all the local people. And I often think later, I saw another photograph, similar photograph taken, on the top ends of Highlands of New Guinea, when the Lay brothers went in there, and all these natives are standing around and they've got a gramophone going, and all these natives are looking so completely stunned, didn't have the faintest idea what was going on. And I thought, that's exactly the same as the photograph I saw at the opening of the first plunger of when they had the first explosion. The local people didn't have the faintest idea what was happening to them or what was going to happen to them. And I guess at that stage the Public Works Department were going to build the dams, and I don't think they knew what they were doing either, because when they handed it over to the contractors, they moved it about 2 miles downstream. So I think if the Public Works Department had been doing it, it might have been still going. That would have been an interesting thing. But anyway, so I was brought up on this property and lots of old stuff, I suppose, surrounded by old buildings and bits and pieces. And I had an aunt who used to go overseas. She had a bit of money, do the old P&O liner thing over to Europe and all that sort of thing. And I must have expressed a bit of interest in history and that sort of thing, because she sent me back all these booklets from the Scandinavian countries where they were moving all their rural old buildings and that sort of thing into a central place to preserve them. Now, I couldn't really read the text, but I could see from the pictures what they were trying to do. And at that stage, the water was coming up pretty well around old Adaminaby. They'd put the dam wall in. And all these old buildings and various old wagons and coaches and God knows what was going underwater. So I thought, this is a bit of a shame. I'll try and collect a lot of this stuff and I'll preserve it, you know. It'll be a good thing to do. So I did that for a few years, and then my father took me aside. I was an only son, you see, and he said, look, son, he said, shearing sheds are actually for shearing sheep in. Hay sheds are for hay. Get rid of that rubbish, you see. So I thought, well, I don't know. I spent a lot of time gathering all this stuff together. I didn't know what to do with it. Then I had this bright idea, maybe I should start a local museum and sort of move all this stuff in and set it up. And the locals would soon see what I was trying to do, and they'd take it over, and I could get back to my rural pursuits, you see. So, oh, that was a wonderful idea. So I looked around for a suitable building at that time. And, of course, the Snowy Mountains Authority, they were running their conducted car convoys and tours, and there's lots of people. But the only accommodation available in the area, nothing much out Kinderbine side or anywhere else, was in Cooma. I think at that time we had about 19 motels in Cooma, 5 or 6 pubs, and when it was really busy they'd take a lot of people into private houses. So a lot of tourists around, so I thought they could be the people who'd sort of fund this sort of thing. So I sort of better find a bit of a suitable building and a bit of ground. And at that stage it was rather interesting. The old place out at Bunyan was available, the old inn out there, the old inn down in Lambie Street, and the old place of the 4 Mile. They're all built about 1858, 1860. They're all pretty much the same. And they're all worth £2,000. Now, there was a little difficulty there because I didn't have any money. You know, if you can't let that sort of thing stop you. So I went to the local bank I'd dealt with for many years and said, you know, told him what I had in mind. He said, oh, wonderful idea, wonderful idea. And then I said, could I have some money? And he didn't think it was so good. So I ended up going to, I'd always dealt with the stock. I'd bought and sold a few head of stock and that sort of thing. to Elder Smith at the time, they were the wool brokers, and they said, well, we've never lent any money for that sort of thing, but you've borrowed money before for stock and you've always paid it back, so they lent me the money. So that was a good start. So in I went, and I decided on the place out at the 4 Mile, because at that time everybody stayed in Cooma and went out every day to see the various sights of the mountains or the Snowy Mountains tunnels and whatever they were building, you see, so they'd go out, so they'd go past the door. So that worked out pretty well. So I set the place up, and I knew absolutely nothing about tourism, nothing at all. And I remember I'd bought the place, and I had it set up to some degree by about sort of the end of November, and decided on a grand opening. Nobody really sort of took much notice of that as far as I could see. And a few people started to drift in, and then as it got closer to Christmas Day, it got quieter and quieter and quieter, and I thought, struth, I've done my dough here. I'll stay open till New Year, and then I'll have to sell up and try and make the best of it that I can. And what I didn't realise, but in those days particularly, people used to stay at home until Christmas Day, and then after that they used to move into the area in a big way. So Christmas Day, dead as a doornail. Boxing Day, we had about 600 people in. And at 2 and sixpence, I was made. So that was the beginning of it. In those days, there was big rushes over the holiday periods, and in between it was fairly quiet, relatively. But we always had these conducted tours, which were done on the Snowy. Car convoys and that thing going past, so it did pretty well. Now, that sort of went on till about 1967, when the Snowy decided to wind down. They had a big public relations branch, and they were sort of running the show here, I suppose, in a lot of ways. And Cooma thought that it was a tourist town, but it was really organised all by the Snowy. So William Hudson had decided very early in the piece that the only way to make sure that the government kept giving him money was to bring lots and lots of people through the area, and they would see what the Snowy was doing, and the politicians wouldn't be going to say no more money. So it worked very well. But by 1967, they'd completed most of the works that they wanted to do, so they closed down their public works, public relations branch. All the people got out of that, and they handed over the conducted car convoys to the local council here in Cooma and said, you can organise that from now on. And they closed a lot of things down. They gave the Happy Jacks Road, for argument's sake, back to the national parks and said, that's your responsibility now. And that happened right around the area. So suddenly, these conducted tours, which had been so successful in the past, they'd been successful because they'd been done very well organised. You weren't allowed to go around the Snowy scheme unless you were with a guide. And they used to go to the mess, they'd eat with the men, and the food was on the way, they had toilet facilities and all that sort of thing. Suddenly all that was changed and stopped. So the fellow who took over the conducted car convoy, particularly from Cooma here, he was up against it, because the national parks had immediately closed down the Happy Jacks Road, which was probably one of their most scenic trips, because they came from Cabramurra down to the Eucombeen Dam Wall, and on the way they passed the Eucombeen Lookout, which was exactly 1 mile above sea level. And during, I think it was when Queen came out in 56, they put a viewing platform there and toilets and all that sort of thing. You could see the whole of Lake Eucombeen from up there. They closed that down and said no more cars to go through there, no more people to go through there. And the last year that the conducted tours were operating, they had 68,000 people down that road. Now that was a big blow, because suddenly the major attraction, because they used to come down there, they had the tea house at the Eucombeen Dam Wall, they'd pick up Paddy Kerrigan's boat there, they'd go up in the boat to old Adaminaby, and the coaches would go around and pick them up. It was a pretty interesting sort of tour, and lots of people loved it. But suddenly all that had stopped. The result was that this fellow who took over the conducted tours, it went for 2 years, and at the end of 2 years, absolutely no more interest in the whole thing at all. So this changed the whole tourism business for the area, I suppose, in many ways, in the sense that I was doing pretty well, because I was one of the few attractions that people came to the area could see, And also we had things like the fairy tale park stuff started up out here at Mount Gladstone. We had the ag barn and the llama farm and the fish farm, and these were all attractions because people were coming here, they couldn't see much of the snow anymore, they needed something else to see. And it really had a great impact on the town. And at that time, at the same time, everybody said, well, Cooma's had it, that's the end of Cooma. And you could buy houses here very cheaply, and a lot of particularly the old snowy places in Cooma East there, and people were picking them up and taking them away down the coast and all that sort of thing. So it just shows you that change is happening all the time, and this did have a big impact. Now, I battled on out here pretty well because I was said one of the few attractions which were available to people, so we still were getting a lot of people. We were getting around about 25 to 30,000 people throughout here, which was a killer job because we were open 7 days a week, 365 days of the year. We did open on Christmas Day and let people through for nothing because there were so many people wandering around with nothing to do. We thought, well, they'd better have somewhere to go. And you'd be open from people would be coming at 7 in the morning till 7 at night. You didn't know whether you're going to get 10 people or 200. It was a real killing job. And at the same time, I was trying to run the property out of the farm out of Adaminaby. So about an 8-day week, I thought it was, in many ways. But anyway, that sort of came to a bit of an end because in 1980, the Snowy River Shire, we were in Snowy River Shire on that side of the road, Monero Shire on the other side of the road, Snowy River Shire got someone in Sydney to look over all the various sort of little spots and areas around the place, and suddenly I'd originally set out it had been I'd had special permission to get 3 acres of ground there for heritage use, and suddenly I became rural. I was zoned rural again, and they said, well, you can't put any more buildings up, you know, that's the end of that, you'll have to sort of, they weren't very helpful. So I fought them for a couple of years, and then I said, oh, I'm sick of this, so I sold out and moved out in about 6 weeks. And I was really upset with the council at the time, but like so many other things that happen to you during life, many things happen which are really, if you see the benefit in it, you really should have a second think about it. So when I got out to the farm, I realised that I was going mad working so much, and I had to slow down. So anyway, we were out there and we were running the farm, and I'd put up a big building out there because I wanted to sort of show off a bit of my material. And a lot of the coach groups who'd been coming to the 4 Mile for so many years said, where are you? We need you because we need another attraction. We've got to have somewhere to take these people. So that was all right. So that was a bit of a problem there, because when I'd moved out and built this big shed, I'd said to the council that I don't want to, you stay off my land and I'll, we'll be good friends, you know. So, and even though I had insurance to have people there at public risk, I thought the first thing, if there is an accident, they'll say, is this place passed by council? And I thought, oh, Steve, I might be in trouble. So I had a lot of old material that I'd collected over the years in the shed. So I invited all the senior staff from the council and the councillors out and had a look, and they sort of wandering around saying, how long's this been here, you know? In the end, they came to the conclusion it was an existing building, so that was okay. We went on from there. So that was a good move out there, because at that stage, as I say, I was sick of working 7 days a week and not knowing anything, so we decided that we would only take groups by appointment. And that worked out very well. This is where Cole was running his show up the road, and most of the people we were getting at that stage were self-funded retirees who used to come up here, and they'd stay at a place like Cole's establishment up the road, and they'd stay here for 3 or 4 days, and Cole would take them out on a coach each day in different directions. So we had people coming from Cooma and Jindabyne and Adaminaby and all around with these coach groups, because they had organised these tours. So if you're in Cooma, for argument's sake, or wherever you were, they'd go out one day to Adaminaby side and have a look up around Kyandra and all around there, and they'd call in at our place. Or the next day they might go up to the Jindabyne side, or the next day they'd go down to Bombala and down the coast. So it was really a hub area here, and from here they could go and radiate in all different directions. This worked out very well in the sense that I knew who was coming and when, and quite often we might have two or three or four coaches in one day. We used to do morning teas, lunches, afternoon teas, and dinners at night for the local people in Adaminaby or around about Providence, mainly because the coach drivers were only allowed to sort of drive so much after work. But so we had a good fun, and I got married just when we started this out here at the 4 Mile back in 62. And my wife Kate, she was born in Scotland, and she was the best mate you could ever have, in the sense that she, when she first came to Australia, her parents had lived out at Dromore and then out at Durangle, but Kate had, they'd been living in the bush in the sense that she'd been brought up, her mother didn't even have a fuel stove. She knew how to cook on a camp oven, and she knew all this old stuff. And Kate was very interested in old clothing. So she'd made a big collection of clothing. So I had all the guns and the coaches and all that sort of stuff, and I could talk about that, and she could talk about this old clothing, and much of it was sort of old women's underwear and all this sort of stuff, and she had a really good... She could give a really entertaining talk on that, and she could handle a lot of people pretty well, because always somebody had some shrewd remarks to make, and I think we really had a good show out there, in the sense that, again, I used to try and keep my talks to about 20 minutes. But I tried to sort of... They were more humorous stories than anything else. It wasn't a school teacher sort of job. And I'd been brought up with all these old people out on the properties and the farms and that sort of thing. And I'd spent a bit of time in the mountains with the huts in the early days, because we had stock up in the mountains till about 1952 or 3. And all these old fellows, they were full of stories. That was their only entertainment. And then my dad, who was born, he was born in 1901, he said he was too young to go to the First World War, and he got very upset about that. But he said he had to go up and work with all these old men in the huts up in the mountains every summer. And he said he had a great memory for all the stories that he heard, and he told me a lot of these stories, and a lot of the old fellows told me. And a lot of the stories, most of them are humorous, and I felt that they were humorous because they had such a hard life, these people, that things would get pretty tough, and then somebody would tell a bit of a funny story, or they'd say something funny, and that would bring everybody back to square one. So I had a fund of these stories to tell, and Cole's probably heard them so many times he used to get sick of it. But the people liked that sort of thing. I used to get worried because we used to have people, they liked where they were staying, the accommodation was good, and they liked coming to Happy Valley. And I used to think, well, Stuart, these people have been here two or three times, I better tell a different story. And I'd often say to these people, you were here before, yeah, do you remember what I told you? And they'd say, no, but gee, it was funny. and if they really remembered what I told them, I'd just say, well, you know, since you were here last, I've done a lot more research on this, so what I told you last time may not have been totally correct, but what I'm telling this time is. But anyway, it used to go off pretty well, and we had some really nice times out there. It was good. So that went on for quite a while, and then around about 2000, and I think we had those big fires in 2003, wasn't it? And I lost my wife in 2002. And those fires had a dramatic impact on the people coming to this area by coaches, because people used to say, oh, instead of coming from Melbourne up around the snowy mountains here and going to Canberra, they just bypassed the area and started to go straight to Canberra and so on. So we lost a lot of coaches, and we were just starting to get business back again. And then there was a big change in the sense that people started to go, the cruise ships started to come in. And people found that for $100 a day they could go on a cruise ship. They didn't have to do anything. They could eat as much as they liked. There was good entertainment. So the cruise ships gradually took over. And in the next few years, the coach traffic dropped. We used to get about 130 or 40 coaches from the period between September and May, which was our summer period. In the end, we dropped down to sort of 6 or 8 coaches. It just killed the coach trade pretty well dead in the water. And that's the situation now, I think, because the cruise ships are really sort of taking all that business away. But it just again shows that things are changing all the time. Now, with Tuma, that sounds bad, doesn't it? there's been a lot of opportunities, I suppose, for Cooma to do a lot of things. But Cooma, I felt, in too many ways has been tied to the mountains. They've always said that they were the gateway to the Snowy Mountains. Well, I think that was pretty right. If you've ever put a mob of sheep through a gate, you don't stand in the road. Well, it's a bit like that here in the ski traffic going up and down when you're trying to get across Sharp Street. So I think that they've concentrated too much on that, and I think that's a shame, because there's been a lot of other opportunities that have occurred where Cooma could become its own master, if you like, rather than kowtowing. So they've gone from, you know, we're the gateway to the Snowy, and I think the last one was we're the capital of the Snowy. Well, for goodness sake, they're not even in the Snowy Mountains. They ought to forget it. And I think people think it's a bit of a joke. But Cooma in itself is a very interesting place. You know, and it's got a long history. I notice on the outskirts of town you've got an obelisk there to Stres Leki. Now, he's a Polish fellow that I don't think he had anything to do with Cooma, as far as I know. But we had a fellow come through here in 1834, which was a few years before Stres Leki came around, a fellow called John Lotsky. He came through here in 1834. He met up with the local Aboriginal people. He had a lot to say about them. He collected a vocabulary of about 160 words, their language and all that sort of thing. He came to Bunyan and he called on Dr. Reed there. And then he came here to Cooma, which was Cooma Station, which was spelled K-U-M-A. And it was run, the superintendent there was a fellow called Barth. Now, Barth must have been a pretty smart sort of bloke, because between the two of them, they came up. This was outside what they call the 19 counties, and nobody was supposed to be allowed to be here, right, in 1834. And he came up with a list of 31 major properties in the area, running an estimated, they said, 23,000 head of cattle and 40,000 sheep. This is an area where there's not supposed to be anybody, right? So he was an interesting bloke, this Lotsky. And he was the one who went out and, I suppose you wouldn't say discovered, the mineral springs at Rock Flat, because he sort of made a lot of them. He said they were very good. And he continued on his trips. He went right down towards Delegat there, to further down below Delegat there. And at one stage we thought he'd even climb Kosciuszko. But he wasn't a very favoured person with the government. He was a bit of a whistleblower. And they didn't take any notice of him, but he was a very well-educated fellow. He spoke about 5 languages, and unfortunately, when he had to get out of the country, he had to start carting firewood and renting out his horse, because they wouldn't help him at all. But he only published about half of his journal of his trip up here. And that's a bit of a shame, because one of the things he did do here as he was coming through, he collected what they call a Song of the Women of the Monero Tribe, which is the first published bit of music in Australia, which is quite interesting. And his Aboriginal, you know, he was very interested in the Aboriginal people. Now, I was thinking I think it was 1991, they found these kangaroo tooth necklace out here at Bunyan. You know, 364 kangaroo's teeth, and when they tested those, they were 7,000 years old. Now, that's only the 4th time anything like that's ever been found in Australia. So I think there's another big opportunity here for the local people to get together behind the Aboriginal people and make this a centre, because out at Christchurch, that's the biggest Aboriginal campsite we've ever found on Monero. So it was obviously a gathering place for the tribes in the area. So quite an interesting aside to it there. I think there's always opportunities occurring, and I think Cooma's got a future if it's just serve as a, it cuts the ties with the mountains and concentrates on its own what it's got. I always think that we've got lots of doctors here, we've got a good hospital, we've got relatively cheap accommodation, people are always looking for industries here. What about down in Canberra particularly, they're always putting in big units for, you know, tired people and also people with dementia and all that sort of thing. If we want to go from here into some sort of unit like that, we've got to go to Bombala or Delegate, or because there's never enough room around here. Why don't we concentrate on doing something like that? Provides a lot of work for the local people. And I think it fits in with our nice, quiet, rural sort of lifestyle here. I'd hate to see this place become Kinderbond. Anyway, so that's about my story.